Hi, my name's Stephen McCrory, and I'm filling in for Dr. Pat for the Dr. Pat show this evening. And we have a wonderful guest coming onto the show for an uninterrupted hour, free of commercials, for you, the listeners. I have a wonderful guest coming on. He gained national attention with his investigations into Area 51 and his accurate predictions regarding the 1989 San Francisco earthquake. He later went on to successfully predict the 1992 Landers, the 1994 Northridge, and the 1995 Japan earthquakes. In order to get his amazingly accurate predictions out to the world, he formed the Prophecy Research Institute in 1992 and began publishing the Delphi Associates newsletter in 1993. In the early 1980s, he and Dr. Elizabeth Targ pioneered many of the current techniques used in remote viewing today. He is a skilled and experienced remote viewer and has taught remote viewing in seminars all over the world. He has been a freelance writer, producer, and investigative reporter on television programs such as Sightings, Strange Universe, and Hard Copy. He is an independent feature film writer, director, author. He is also the founder and chief analyst for the, as I said before, the Delphi Associates Investment Group, a $6 million fund engaged in using remote viewing in the global foreign exchange markets. So welcome to the show, Sean. Sean David Morton.
And a snappy dresser and a heck of a dancer. How are you, Steve?
I'm good.
I'm sorry they made you read that that tome of a bio there of different things. And just a minor correction. We're not doing the Delphi Associates Investment Group anymore. It's that's kind of defunct now. We're just in the process of right now just doing all the accounting to kind of close those down because we're devoting ourselves more to feature films, to basically getting the word out there through enlightenment, through entertainment, which is kind of what we're all supposed to be doing here. So,
well, that's kind of what I was going to ask you first of all. What kind of work have you been doing now? Because most of the way you came to, as I said before, national attention, where you gained recognition, was through your predictions. But what kind of work have you been doing just recently?
Well, just recently, it's been about working with I've been speaking at a number of expos, working on books. We've got the Conscious Life Expo here in Los Angeles coming up February 8th, 9th, and 10th. We're putting together a tour to Peru from February 13th through March 1st. We're joining up with Dr. Susan Chomsky, who's written Divine Revelations and Spiritual Street Smarts, and a fantastic Incan elder, actually, down in Peru, named Malku, who has written a number of books and is a national celebrity there. And there's a huge lunar eclipse going on at the time. We'll be there. We'll actually be at Machu Picchu during the lunar eclipse. And they've just opened up Easter Island for tourism just in the last 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. It used to be that you couldn't really even visit because there was only like a bunkhouse that slept like 16 people, and so now they finally put some hotels actually on Easter Island, so you actually get the idea. It is my belief that Easter Island is actually a heart chakra of the planet, that there's a balance that goes on between Easter Island and Machu Picchu as the heart chakra that makes up a six chakra energy system that consists of Lhasa Tibet is the base root chakra, Cairo, Egypt, and the Great Pyramid is the prostate ovarian chakra, the second chakra, the third chakra is Stonehenge, the solar plexus, the fourth chakra, the base frequency is Machu Picchu, but the high frequency is Easter Island. The throat chakra is actually downtown Los Angeles, right at the gazebo on Alvera Street, and the sixth chakra is a little town outside of Osaka, Japan, which is called Tenri City at a temple there. It's a religion called Tenrikyo, and they actually have a huge pillar that they call the Kao Di Dai that acts as an acupuncture needle, if you will, directly into the third eye of the planet. So, where this all comes together, the prophecy and the prediction stuff, which comes together with the financial stuff, which comes together with the earthquakes and earth changes stuff, it's kind of an interesting technique that, that the Indians call long walking. And the idea behind long walking is that you become the earth, in essence. If you have a penchant towards earth wizardry, as you will, you become sensitive to animals, plants, trees, the ocean. The ocean becomes like your blood. The land becomes like your bones. The air becomes the atmosphere becomes the air in your body. The sun becomes your spirit. So by connecting with all that, it speaks to me in a very interesting way as to things that occur, and especially with the earthquake stuff. For some reason, I've been particularly adroit and adept at predicting quakes, just because it's something that I started to develop as part of my remote viewing and as part of working with maps and scrying maps that we call cartomancy. And I used to work with a group actually here in Southern California, and we made the news probably about a dozen times or so. Because we'd go on the news and actually predict when a quake was going to happen, and the quake would happen on the exact day that we talked about it happening, and the news crews would show up at the house, and, so...
How did it all happen for you? Are you practicing? Or did it just come to you like a thunderbolt out of the sky?
Well, I'm not a... I don't have as good a story, I guess, as other people might have. I mean, I wasn't like I was a police scientist mixing chemicals one night, struck by a bolt of lightning and became the Human Flash, or, my plane crashed and Abin Sur handed me a ring of power from the Guardians of the Universe and I became Green Lantern. It's nothing like that. I had talents and abilities from when I was very young. I could, at least in my mind, I thought, speak to animals, and I was constantly seeing things that before they happened. Probably my first flash of this was my father was actually involved in the space program, and he was a public relations director for TRW, and so we had astronauts at the house all the time. And Gus Grissom was one of our closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I had these horrible, horrible dreams and described in exact detail Gus's death when the capsule caught fire during a ground test during the Apollo 1 test, and I yelled and screamed about it, and begged Gus not to go, and he wound up, he died. So that was kind of a huge traumatic thing for me. And of course, my family, being very Christian and all, tried to kind of beat it out of me. My grandmother, who was Irish, actually understood a lot more about it. Understood a lot about second sight, and understood a lot about the old ways, as they say. So she kind of protected me from the rest of the people in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I grew older, I had some experiences in Egypt. I had the opportunity to actually live and go to school in Egypt when I was younger, and had some fantastic experiences in the pyramid, and at the same time was just very open to things. I spoke to Muslim imams. I spoke to Jewish rabbis. I spoke to... I started studying occult sciences like tarot and astrology, and when I was 19, I lived with a swami that was actually from the Ganges Mountains in the Himalayas, who was my comparative religions professor, actually, when I went to school in Egypt. And so he came over and visited with me, and I learned techniques from him and palmistry. And so this has just been a thing that anybody can do with enough practice and enough dedication. And I've just tried to activate the right side of my brain a little more than most people do. And the nice part about it is that when I started the Prophecy Research Institute and I started publishing the Delphi Associates newsletter, it got to the point of where I was writing articles every month. And so I had a great opportunity to actually put in print my dreams and my visions and my impressions, and then watch them not only come true, but actually have a written record of the things that I was doing. And then Art Bell in the early 90s gave me a great opportunity, because he learned that I was very much a kind of a spiritual person that was investigating some UFO stuff out at Area 51, and Art was the one that opened it up and said, let's talk about it. You have some predictions about quakes and things. I'd like to talk to you about it on the show. And that's kind of how it got kick-started.
That's great. And I've heard that 95% of the predictions, in fact, when we met a couple of months ago, we were talking about one of your predictions. Just for the listeners, you said to me, that you actually predicted the 9/11 attacks, and you have that on tape too.
Well, it's on tape, it's on TV, it's on, and it's all over. I mean, it was up on the internet, I think, from about 94, 95 on, and
I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, it was actually a 1996 piece, I think, that Hard Copy did called "The Prophet of Doom," and they said, you know, look out, New York, in 2000, and I talked about how I saw two missiles hitting the World Trade Centers, and I saw what looked like a huge cloud of white smoke, just or these this white dust just engulfing New York, and people running and screaming. And of interest, those predictions actually came out of a psychic trip I took to the future. How do I explain this? When I was in Nepal, I actually lived in a monastery in Nepal for about 8 months or so, called Tengbache. And a very sad thing of note, let me pay him some homage and respect, one of the high lamas of our monastery, Sir Edmund Hillary, may his soul be blessed and transform and continue, yeah. Sir Edmund Hillary died, and he was actually one of the high lamas of Tengbache, and he set up a health system there for the Sherpas, and I met him in 1986 when I was there, when he brought blankets to the monastery, and you know, the whole, he was a fantastic, fantastic man, a very, very courageous, and a true gentleman in every sense of the word. So while I was there, we used to do a lot of meditations that had to do with past life progressions. So I had some interesting experiences with previous lives, and it's a way for you to kind of ratchet out certain types of fears and you know, unkink your garden hose, so to speak, with the water going back to source. And so I asked Rinpoche, Lobsang Thundun, I asked him if it was possible to use these progressions, because time is all kind of happening at once, if it was possible to go into the future and actually see what you would be in a future life. And he said, of course it would be, and I started doing these meditations where I was projecting myself towards into a future life, and I found myself very much looking out through the eyes of this other person that was living about 100 years or so plus from now, and just saw a very, very unique and very interesting world, a world that had gone through great tragedy but also great blessing, a world that had gone through great social, political, and spiritual evolution, and I decided that there was a way that I could tap into that energy from the future and see if I could channel that energy back into the past to do a future history lesson, if you will. In other words, go to that point 100 years in the future, look back on our past, and get an idea of where it was we were going. And part of what I talked about in 1994 was when I did this, which later became something called the Vajra Chronicles, and I'm actually working on putting the final nails in the book right now. Part of the prediction was that at the turning of the Great Age Year, which is actually 2001 exactly, because it doesn't actually turn until 2001, that there would be a series of terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, D.C., that they would be chemical attacks on Washington, D.C., and there were chemical attacks actually a few months later, where they cleared out the Senate buildings and the post offices and whatever else were anthrax attacks, actually. And that it would be that no one would really know who did it, but that history talked about an Islamic jihad, which was kind of an amorphous conglomeration of Islamic states. That might not be the case, but that's how history actually looks at it. It's more likely that it was kind of an inside job by some very bad people that have more to do with the intelligence communities, the military industrial entertainment complex, than it has to do with a conglomeration of sort of evil Islamic states, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, so in 1994, I'm sorry, this is a long explanation, in 1994 that led to my predictions about 9/11 and what I was talking about, that these attacks on New York City would be the linchpin that would actually shift consciousness and bring on a number of other disasters down the pipe. So there you go.
Well, what do you see for the future? What does Sean David Morton see? How do you see it? I mean, in science, we've practically mastered, you know, well, we haven't mastered science, but I think that's what we have to do. We probably, would you say that we've probably discovered science as far or as near as far as we can possibly go, but haven't actually mastered it yet? What do you see for the future? Is it bleak? I mean,
no, it's bleak for a time, but it's only bleak for a time for certain parts of the world. So, how do I describe this? Part of the reason I started doing the work that I did with the Prophecy Research Institute and the Delphi Associates newsletter, and you know, was to get the voice of reason more out there, to show people that there weren't these apocalyptic endings, there weren't these mass Armageddons, there weren't that the playing field of the is kind of balanced in such a way that we get through it, but at the same time, it's not without pain, it's not without revolt, it's not without revolution. In the near future, for the coming year, which is one of the most interesting aspects, I think, 2008 is going to be one of those things that goes down in history. We've got, obviously, the elections coming up. We've got, I've for some time, I've been predicting what I saw as a Hillary Clinton-Mitt Romney face-off. And the sad part is that whoever becomes president of the United States will actually have more power than any elected leader actually any time in the history of man, considering the amount of militarization of the police forces and the number of executive orders that have been signed into law by the Bush administration, giving almost a unified power to the executive branch, which is unprecedented. But at the same time, it's a number one year numerologically. It's about repowerment of the self. It's about genesis. It's about origins. It's about recreating yourself. It's about doing something new. It's about remembering what it is you wanted to be when you grew up. It's all these things are beginning to shift and change for people, where they're finally saying, it's time, my old life has passed away. It's time for me to start living the dreams that I've had. And at the same time, you have two really major influences happening this year. Actually, there's so many. Just from the study that I've done of the Mayan calendar of Chichen Itza and the measurements of Chichen Itza, the Aztec calendar that's based on the pyramid of Teotihuacan, which is near Mexico City, the study of the sacred geometry and mathematics of the Great Pyramid of Giza, all this prophecy, all this revelation in stone, all these ticking clocks, all these fantastically elegant prophetic monuments that all seem to be ticking backwards towards this one particular point in time, does show that coming between the 2012 to 2014 time period shows a fulcrum, if you will, a balance. We're walking up the seesaw right now, and we're starting to watch history and the planet as we know it begin to tip and begin to come more unstable and unbalanced underneath our feet. And there's so many people that think that 2012 to 2014 or 2012 is the end of time, just like they thought 2000 was the end of time, and it's really not. It's the middle of time.
Yeah.
It's the functioning aspect of when the seesaw tips towards the kind of downhill motion of the next wave of what's going on. Let me rattle off a litany of things that are going down right now. Number one, you have Jupiter moving into Capricorn, and you always watch Jupiter as far as trends or fads or what happens with finances. You know, Jupiter is the king of the planets. It's Zeus Pater, and so Zeus here ruling Jupiter has to do with people's money, their luck, their finances, what have you. You're going to see the stock market. I talked several months back on all these various radio shows that you'd see the stock market hit a high of about 14,500. It hit just underneath that. I think it was like 420 or something, and you'd see the stock market start coming back down the other side. You're already starting to see a retraction of the stock market this week. It's already dropped about 300 points or so, and but you'll see the stock market back to under 10,000, probably in between the 8,500. Let's call it the 8,500 to the 9,500 range. With a low of about 8,500 or so. You're going to see, as I've predicted, gold is going to go over 1,000 and hit a high of about $1,200 or so. You're going to see silver at about $30 an ounce. You're going to, but that's actually not even the most, when you're looking at Capricorn, Capricorn is industry. It's bricks and mortars. It's rebuilding. It is the end of illusions. It's people saying, you know, okay, enough of that funny business. It's time for the rubber to meet the road. It is the taskmaster of the cosmos that brings you rewards if you've been doing the work, and yet hits you with the stick like a headmaster does if you haven't been doing your homework. And at the same time this year, and this is a planetary galactic sea change, you have Pluto, which is one of our outer planets, and I know they've downgraded Pluto, that it's not supposed to be a planet anymore, and the new planet is, Aerostats or something. It was actually named after Xena, the warrior princess, for a while, and now it's named after, like, the Greek goddess of chaos. I can't even pronounce it. Uh-huh. But Pluto is the drumbeat. Pluto is the bass drum, the boom, 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 that goes through the entire solar system. And with Pluto moving into Capricorn, and it goes into Capricorn until 2023, by the way, this is the real sea change here, because the last two times, it's taken 500 years for Pluto to go through this cycle again, and the last time it went through were the 1760s, 1770s, 1780s, which was, of course, the Revolutionary War, which was done over finances, which was done over taxes, which was done over a huge reorganization of the planet's governments at the time and our relationship to government and a new form of freedom. Primarily based on a lot of financial oppression that was going on with the British versus the United States. No offense there, Steve. But
I'm just happy I'm Irish.
Yeah, exactly. But before that, I mean, the more remarkable part of this was before that, it was the early part of the 1500s. So you had it from about 1515 until about 1535. So, you know, we've got, it's the age of Nostradamus. It's the age of the Black Plague. It's the age of the Reformation. It's the age of Protestantism. So once again, a complete reworking of religion and spirituality, of back to things that make more sense, back to things that aren't as mythologically based, back to things that work, if you will. And so it's taken us 500 years to get through to this, with not only Pluto going through Jupiter in Capricorn, but now Pluto moving into Capricorn for this next age is going to be really remarkable, and remarkable for the United States as well, as to how things are going to revamp themselves. At the same time, you have what's called the fifth night in the Mayan calendar, where the Mayan calendar talks about the fifth night being the year of Armageddon. And that from November 19th of 2007 through November 12th of 2008, the year of Armageddon means that there will be a shocking and possibly forcible realignment of the thought structures and systems of the left and right-hand sides of the brain, with the intuitive self versus the logical deductive self, the quantum self realigning time-wise with the linear self, that the left-hand side of the brain thinks in terms of up, down, right, left, center, and a measurement of time, a 4D dimension. Mm-hmm. The right-hand side of the brain thinks in terms of the quantum, or a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth dimension. Doesn't understand up, down, right, left, and center. Doesn't understand the concept of time. Well, actually, understands it better, because it's omnipresent. It's the God module in every single one of us that actually gives us this kind of omnipresent, fantastic relation to the center of the galaxy and the cosmos and what have you. And the fascinating thing about this is that it talks about how Eastern philosophy, based again on intuition, based on the self, based on the essence of the wonder of within ourselves, very much like over the Temple of Apollo in Greece, was a saying called "Nothi Seclorum," and "Nothi Seclorum" in Greek meant "Know thyself." But there's the rest of it was, and this is what it's very interesting, because they don't tell you what the rest of the saying is. "Nothi Seclorum" was just "Know thyself." That was the short version of the saying. The entire saying was "Know thyself, and all the secrets of the gods and the universe will be made known to you." That's what the entire quote is on the Temple of Apollo in Greece near Delphi. And so that core essence means that the coming to the knowing of the self means the realignment with intuition, means that the right and left-hand sides of the brain, the male and female sides of the brain, have been apart, if you will, have been in their own separate bedrooms doing their own separate things. And now the doors are opening and there's the initial shock of them coming back together, almost like a the first boy, the first girl who come across the room at the freshman school dance. That kind of tension, that kind of wariness, that kind of suspicion, and then things are going to start coming together. Well, this means some kind of realignment with the East, with Buddhism, with Eastern mysticism, with their ability to appreciate the cosmos and the universe rather than to understand it. And the fascinating part about that is that the Mayan calendar says that this pulse from the East is going to occur between August 10th and August 31st of this year. Well, that's when the Olympics are happening in Beijing. So from 8:08, which at 8 p.m., which is when the Olympics start actually in Beijing, through approximately Labor Day or so, there's going to be something that's going to go on in China that may have to do with a final exposure of communist Red China's oppression of its people, oppression of religion like Tibetan Buddhism and Falun Gong. But we're talking about probably, you know, a billion, half, you know, 1.5 to 1.7 billion people or so that are going to be exposed to Western culture and Western technology in such a way that they're either going to want it or realign themselves. But there's something about the Olympics and something happening during the Olympics. And I think also that the real trigger, it is interesting because the real link between these two is going to be Pakistan. And with what's going on in Pakistan right now, there's the good possibility that you're going to see the army revolt against Musharraf. You may, in fact, see a radical Islamic regime get its hands on all those nuclear weapons and missiles to put the nuclear weapons on top of, which is going to directly threaten India. And the United States is seriously talking now about possible vertical incursions into Pakistan with the help of the Indians. And, of course, if that happens and we get caught doing it, taking away their guns, so to speak, there's going to be hell to pay. So the Pakistan situation, I said in 1994 in the Vajra Chronicles that World War III will be started not in the Middle East, but would be started when Pakistan attacks India with nuclear weapons. And so it's an expression of the conflict within ourselves that's going to manifest itself all across the world this year.
I think we may have a caller coming in.
Okay.
Is there a caller on the line? I'll just cut you off there, Sean.
No, it's fine.
Have we got someone on the line?
Well, let's talk about other stuff.
Okay. Well, it's certainly an interesting subject, and leads me on to the next. I want to talk about a conscious life expert, because you're going to be speaking there.
Sure.
It's the sixth annual Conscious Life Expo. Just for the listeners, there's a business symposium, film festival. It's all about empowered living, alternative health, conscious social justice topics. The primary intention of the Conscious Life Conference and Exposition is to participate in the conscious co-creation of a new world, which is what we're speaking about this evening with Sean, a world based on new paradigms in science, spirituality, and global community. It is one of the largest conferences of its kind in the USA today, and I invite the listeners to come down, have a look on the website, go to www.consciouslifeexpo.com, again, www.consciouslifeexpo.com, and check it out. There's over 200 exhibits. There's, like, I think there's, is it 40 lecturers or workshops? Sean?
It's a circus. It's a cornucopia of wisdom.
Well put. So, yeah. So, please, again, for the listeners, please come down. Enjoy yourself. It's a fantastic weekend. I know yourself, Sean, you've been doing this event for, you know, 3 or 4 years now, haven't you?
I think since the beginning. It's fantastic. It's Los Angeles. It's movie stars. It's
the throat chakra.
It is
the voice
chakra,
of the world.
It's the fifth chakra of the planet, so it's it's where a lot of this stuff really kind of started. I mean, it's kind of evolved from what used to be the Whole Life Expos, which used to be these kind of gargantuan monsters across the landscape, to shows that I've become much more personal and much more interesting and much more devoted to.
Yes.
You know, I think.
Well, what will you be speaking about? You're doing a workshop Saturday and Sunday.
No, I don't know. What am I speaking about? I don't know, about 90 minutes, I think. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to shift my focus to not just talking about the prophecy stuff and the 2012 stuff and the financial stuff and things like that, but shifting focus towards, you know, Jesus said that it's up to us to preach the gospel and heal the sick. So there's a lot of debate about what the gospel actually is, but there's not too much debate about healing the sick. So we're my buddy Richard Bartlett, Dr. Richard Bartlett's going to be in town. I've learned a lot from Richard. We're doing a lot of healing. I'm developing something I call quantum enlightenment dynamics, which has a lot to do with the philosophy behind healing and shifting people's perspectives. So I'm going to try to take at least a half an hour out of each one of my talks and lectures there to try to do some healing at the end of the class and work with some people. I taught a whole quantum enlightenment dynamic seminar in New York City, which was just a fantastic sold out event and had some amazing things going on. I'm going to be on a panel about 2012, actually, that's going to be hosted by George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM. And then the next day, I think I'm hosting a panel that has some luminaries on it that are some fantastic people. So I get to moderate and take questions from the audience and kind of do a hosting thing, which is kind of nice, like I used to do back in the old radio days. Nice. So
Hoagland, I think Hoagland's on that panel, isn't he?
He's on the panel that I'm moderating, and he's on the panel that I'm on, I think, with George. So George is going to be moderating one panel. I'm going to be moderating the other one, and then just trying to support the people that are there and trying to get the message out that there's the great thing about these shows is that there's a lot of different information. It's fantastic for people to come actually kind of meet and greet. A lot of us in this field are kind of victims of our own success because it used to be 10, 15 years or so ago that, you had to actually go to the mountaintop to see the Swami, to see the Guru, to see the Lama. Now it's all online. So it's victims of our own success being so many of the things that were cutting edge 10 years or so ago, I mean, yoga and health food and new diets, new thought, new spirituality have now moved closer and closer to the mainstream. So every time you come to a show like this, every time you come to the Conscious Life Expo or any of these metaphysical programs, you're looking at the future. You're looking at what people are going to be doing and thinking and how they're going to be acting and what they're going to be activating 10 years or so down the pipe. So it's great for me. It's always a view into the future to see what the technology is and what people are coming up with. And at the same time, you add it to your own body of knowledge. You take what's true for you and, continue to grow. So I'm going to be working on healing, quantum enlightenment dynamics. We're going to be talking about the next harmonic convergence, which is actually coming up in May 27th, 28th, 29th of 2010. Which is really our last chance to come together planetarily before the big 2012 consciousness time shift. And it's a culmination of the energies that were begun during the harmonic convergence in August of 1987. So, and at the same time, also 2012, there's a total solar eclipse that's actually cutting across the western United States, with the penumbra of the eclipse being Mount Shasta, actually on May 20th of 2012, that then lines up for the first time in 26,000 years with the Pleiades, the Sun, and the Moon directly over the pyramid of Chichen Itza in Mexico, in the Yucatan, which is, yet again, just one more reason that monument was built as a prophetic clock moving backwards in time so that, to show us that these amazing things are happening. Matter of fact, I'm working on an article now, just to give an idea of this, of these momentous events of this next year. There was a very interesting comet that came through the solar system that's actually still sort of working its way through our neck of space. That was called the Edwin Holmes Comet. It was originally discovered in 1892, and it started coming in just as a very minor, kind of silly little comet. There was really nothing to recommend it, and the comet suddenly began to flare into a gigantic blue object. There was literally like a gas. It was literally like a bomb going off, like a sparkler. Mm-hmm. And this thing started going off on the 9th of November and became this gigantic blue comet that let off so much energy and dust or something from within it, this plume, if you will, it actually became the largest object in the solar system, even larger than the sun at that point in time. Now, it's interesting because here you have the beginning of the fifth night that starts November 19th. You've got this comet pluming at that period of time. And 2 years ago, there were a series of crop circles right on the Salisbury Plain, right near Stonehenge, again, the solar plexus chakra, the third chakra of the planet, that were showing diagrams of an exploding planetary body, an exploding comet. Not only were they showing an exploding comet, but there was a very unusual star field, the little dots in the field around it, that actually showed the constellation of Perseus. And it's very unusual because Perseus, in Greek mythology, is the father of a number of Mediterranean races. He was the rescuer of Cassiopeia, Cassiopeia, the princess, and he defeated Theia, who was the sea creature. There's a whole mythology about how he's flying by from the higher plane. He comes down to rescue the feminine mind, if you will, that's chained to the rock and what have you. So the fact that we had a series of crop circles that I'm reprinting in my Delphi Associates newsletter, and you can actually check them out on cropcircleconnector.com. These crop circles are just fantastic, and they predict. We didn't know what they meant at the time, and here 2 years later, this comet comes along, exploding in Perseus, as predicted by the crop circles, showing us that this is yet another cosmic benchmark that somebody out there is trying to tell us that there's a major shift and a change coming.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we've been speaking about.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's all geared around this. There's many of these conscious events that have been just exploding just recently, and as you say, you know, a lot of alternative health programs on TV and radio, all over the media, really, have popped up and really sort of taken the mainstream TV as we see it, taken over, haven't they? And a lot of this stuff is around 2012. This shift in consciousness, isn't it?
Well, it's only, you know, it's 4 years away. I mean, we're looking at something predicted. We're looking at some kind of massive event that's been predicted by the Great Pyramid of Giza, by the Aztec Pyramid of Teotihuacan, by the Incan Pyramid, by the Mayan Pyramid of Chichen Itza, by the Incas, by every place you can look, there's something that's revolving around 2012. And the idea is, there's all these people thinking, why does time end? Why does the Mayan calendar at that point end the major cycle? And I think it has to do with
Just for the listeners, Sean, can you explain, like, Enoch and the 2012 from the Mayan perspective, what that is, what that's all about? December 27th, isn't it, or
24th, 2012. But it's over 21st to 23rd.
Yes.
Well, Enoch and the Mayans are two different things. Enoch is an Old Testament patriarch who was believed, many people believe, to have built a baffle of pyramids across the planet. He was the grandfather of Noah, and called himself the Son of God and Son of Man. Some people thought that he was one of the children of the sky gods, the sons of God. And he's mentioned several times in Genesis, but there's a very unusual passage in Genesis 6 that talks about the sons of God seeing the daughters of men, that they were fair, took them to wife and had sex with them, and their sons and daughters became the kings and queens, governmental structure, and mighty men of old, which is the military. And there were giants in the land in those days, and the giants made slaves of men. Well, there was a race of giants that wandered through the Bible called the Anuki, or the Anukai. Goliath and his four brothers were actually supposedly members of a city that was actually of the Anukai, which was a race of these 14 to 16-foot tall giants. And there's a book, actually, that was edited out of the Old Testament called the Book of Enoch, which scholars found in 1777 in an Ethiopian Bible that dates back supposedly to the time of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, that tells an entire story about how Enoch supposedly, with the help of the sons of God, builds a bunch of pyramids on the planet, and the sons of God start having sex with the human females, very much like most construction crews do, and Yahweh at that time banishes the sons of God, they fall, if you will, banishes them to not only live out their lives here on Earth and curses them with mortality, but that their souls and spirits would actually evolve or devolve along with us. Enoch goes crazy and does something called Enoch's Lament, where he talks about how these dark lords will be with us till the end of time, and they will oppress the children of light, and And some very bad things will happen, that these ravenous giants, and apparently it's because of these ravenous giants that Yahweh returns sometime later and supposedly brings the flood in order to wipe out the children of these of the sons of God and men who in the Book of Enoch became known as the Titans. And it's interesting because Enoch is the one book that actually links the entire Hebrew Judeo-Christian history together with Hindu history, Tibetan history, and Greco-Roman history of the gods and the Titans and the war between the gods and the Titans and what have you. 2012 is significant because in the Great Pyramid of Giza, there is in the pit, which is there's three chambers. There's one called the pit, or the well of souls, as it's called, which is a chamber underneath the pyramid. There's another one called the queen's chamber, which is kind of in the middle, and there's another one up towards the top, which is called the king's chamber. These three chambers represent three paths for mankind. The first and the best chamber points towards an ascension of humanity and a perfection of the human soul that comes sometime approximately in the year 3000, from approximately 3000 to about, you know, the 30th century, in other words. And this is preceded by a number of messiahs. The first would be Buddha, the next would be Jesus Christ, the third one is supposed to come in sometime between 2034 and 2039 or so, and then there's three more after that that all live from approximately 2039 until about the 25th century. But in the pit, you then you have the queen's chamber, which is for all the people that are hooked on the material stuff, and then you have the pit, which is supposedly the people that just don't get it. There is a huge trough that actually looks as though it washes into the actual pit itself, this hole in the floor that has been time dated between 2012 and 2014. That is known as the River of Fire, and nobody knows what that is. Is it a true river of fire? Does the planet catch fire? Is it an asteroid? Is it something coming from the sun? Or is it a massive wave of consciousness that washes everybody that doesn't get with the next wave of consciousness down into the pit and leads to their destruction? The next set of this is that the Aztec calendar, based on the Pyramid of Teotihuacan, the Aztec calendar ends October 28th of 2011. It's kind of weird because the Aztec calendar ends at the best way I can describe it is it ends at a creation point. It ends at conception. It ends at the rock and roll, you know, woohoo sperm hitting egg moment that I think that new ideas and new concepts and that the spiritual shift in humanity begins to be felt. Then you have the Mayan calendar, which ends, or this phase of the Mayan calendar, ends on the winter solstice, which is, there's some debate as to whether or not it's December 21st or December 23rd of 2012. And what happens is that for the first time in 26,000 years and change or so, the sun at that moment in time on the winter solstice will be directly aligned with 27 degrees Sagittarius. The sun will actually be right on the arrow of the archer in the constellation Sagittarius, and through that arrow, Sagittarius looks like a teapot, and then there's like an arrow the spout of it that comes out, but then you have the outer arm of the Milky Way galaxy in which our little neighborhood is comfortably tucked. And so it aligns with 27 degrees Sagittarius. It aligns with the center of the galaxy. And in Chichen Itza, there is something called the ball court, which is this big game they used to play that was kind of a combination between like soccer and football, but the idea was there was a hoop, there was a standing ring made of stone, kind of like a basketball hoop tipped over on its side, and this big ring of stone was where you had to supposedly put the ball in the middle. Well, the sun now aligns with that right dead center of that at dusk or so of December 21st of 2012, being directly aligned with 27 degrees and the center of the galaxy. And the symbolism is that the center of the galaxy, it's very strange because when you go through this hole in the galaxy, it's an open black space. And so the Mayans look at that as being the cosmic womb, the great vagina of the galaxy, and the sun actually aligning with that cosmic space or opening represents the head of a child coming down the birth canal, and actually the glowing head of the enlightened child of the new Christ, of the new man. You can then take the biblical aspect too, because if you want to take it one step further, the biblical aspect talks about a woman who is clothed with the light of the seven stars, and she gives birth to a new race of what are called mighty men, or men with the rods of iron, who are supposed to be like Jedi Knights, you know, new warriors, if you will. And the red dragon of Satan or Lucifer, what have you, actually sits at her knees to devour the child, and the child is it has to be taken and raised in the wilderness and seems to fight this one last great war against the red dragon or the lower forces on Earth at some time. So, so there you go. So it's those are all the different all these different meshing points that, of all these different cultures and all these different civilizations.
Yeah, it really baffles me because you know, with all the technology that we have nowadays and the information that we have received from the Mayans, and they didn't have any technology tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago when they were here. It baffles me to how did they know that the Milky Way, because it's a scientific fact, isn't it, that the Milky Way, our planet, will be aligned with the Milky Way in the galaxy. Is that correct?
Yeah, the sun will, yes. And this is, we go through a 26,000-year cycle where actually our solar system rotates around the central sun, which is actually Alcyone in the Pleiades. And then there's a much greater cycle that lasts, you know, several hundred thousand years of where we go all the way around the edge of the galaxy. So that's, you know, that the Tibetans call the Kali Yuga. But this is also the end of the Kali Yuga, which is the Age of Pain or the Age of Iron, is also beginning to end and bringing with it a golden age. And it is kind of interesting that, once again, Pluto moving through Capricorn is really the taskmaster, is really the headmaster of the school, getting the students ready, making sure that they take their exams, hitting them with a stick to punish those that don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
For when Pluto actually moves into Aquarius in 2023, which then is going to bring the whole new era and the whole new age to the foreground, and is going to have a lot to do with the coming of another Messiah, of the next messianic figure, the next incarnation of Christ, which is heralded and predicted by the Great Pyramid of Giza. One could say that the entire purpose of the building of the pyramid itself was to predict the coming of the central messianic figure that seems to relate to the historical figure that we call today Jesus Christ, whether or not his name was Emmanuel ben Joseph or Apollonius of Tyre or whatever. There was some messianic figure that was predicted by the pyramid that would come between 2 BC and finish their mission April 1st of 33 AD, which was Passover at that time, and that this individual would free mankind from the bounds of karma and sin, if you will, and then that the next step was going to be the next incarnation of this individual as a ruler, as a king or a queen, as somebody who was going to have some kind of temporal power that was going to be very much like, you know, if the Dalai Lama ruled the world sort of thing. But this this person will be recognized almost universally as the Christ, as the Messiah, as the anointed one when this all comes down in 2034 to 2039. But remember, the planet has to be ready for something like that. I mean, you can't... You've got to be able to prepare the field in order to sow the seed. So there's going to have to be a world that's going to be ready for a great spiritual master or teacher to take the reins of power.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. So how we have a short time left, Sean. There's like 10 minutes left.
Oh,
so
that went fast.
I think it's about 10 minutes left, isn't it? About 10 minutes left. 8 minutes.
Yes, there you go.
So, technology. We've been about for thousands of years. We've crammed in technology probably in about a 60-year period from the 40s to now. How comes we didn't discover that before, and how comes it's been crunched into that 60, 70-year period?
Well, I'll just say it's a...
What didn't we know before And what have we got now that has taught us to move forward in that direction? It just, again, it's one of the baffling questions. You seem to have the answer, Sean.
The fascinating thing about it is that, once again, we can look at the pyramid again, because the Great Pyramid has something called the Great Step.
Mm-hmm.
And the Great Step is a step that just goes straight vertically up from approximately 1844 and levels out at around 1900 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an argument that could be made that in that brief 60-year period, or, 56-year period of 1844 to 1900 or so, everything that we use today was invented. If you actually looked at all of human history as a yardstick,
mm-hmm.
You can actually put all of the development of human history into about a 16th of an inch on that yardstick, that nothing really happened through all this other period of time.
Really, it's the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, until that 160 years, which then basically brings...
What were we doing for that long?
Well, I don't know.
Just living in it.
Some people talk about it being a dampening field that seems to dampen the neurons in the brain, the boson layer, just some field that makes us clowny and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that's come along, basically, from 1844 to 1900 and then developed since then, in a very brief period of time of less than 1844, 1940, 160 years or so, we've gone from ships to the moon, and it's been a lot about quantum leaps in consciousness, because it's not quite so much the technology; it is the ability for people to accept what the new technology brings. So
that's true.
The idea with this is that for a long period of time, but here's the other thing too. There's the downside of it. The Egyptians saw the Industrial Revolution and everything that we're doing as the beginning of the age of hell on earth, that we would go away from being connected to the natural world and an agricultural civilization where we interconnected with each other and animals and plants and the earth, to building machines that we would then become the slaves of, which is in essence what happened with the Industrial Revolution. We became the, as Pink Floyd said, welcome my son, welcome to the machine. So it's just that kind of... that kind of idea where we're becoming slaves to the machine. I mean, how many people thought email was a great thing when they first got it? Now it's like, geez, it's like, this biggest chore you have to do is answer all this crap that comes through your email.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
And yoga wasn't practiced even 5 years ago as much as it is today.
It
seems to be your thought and, going back to consciousness.
It goes from being universally rejected to being virtually, and then the pendulum swings to being universally accepted. So where technology is going is far more towards personalization. It's going far more towards what you want and how you want to express your will in the universe. Although that in many ways is separating us as well. And it's why it's leading to a generation of kids that are hyper-intelligent and super smart and yet depressed, and suicide rates are climbing through the roof because these children apparently have too much information. They're constantly being bombarded with information, which is not particularly making them happy because it's very lower mind information. It's not truth or spiritual truth
mm-hmm.
as we know it. They also know that something's wrong, and that they know that the media is covering up a lot of the dysfunctions and a lot of the lies of they know that As Krishna once said, that there are murderers and robbers who run the world disguised as presidents and kings. And so the idea behind this is that the truth and media aspect here by 2012, I think, is going to lead us to a much higher consciousness, to the point of where Carl Jung once said that in the future people will either be more spiritual or there will be no people at all. I thought that was probably one of the best quotes Young ever made. So if you just look at technology itself, within 5 years we'll have a computer that will have the computing power of the human brain. If you look at it that way, within 10 years we'll have home computers that will have the computing power of the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another 5 years after that we'll have laptop computers with the computing power of the human brain.
Yeah.
So the idea is that how do we use this technology to advance ourselves rather than becoming ultimately a matrix society where we become slaves to the machine?
Well, that's interesting. I was reading an article. Excuse me. I was reading an article today, and approximately 280,000 people in America today arrive in a minimally conscious state or vegetative. They're in a vegetative state, and scientists have just discovered that reawakening the dormant mind. So what they've done is they put what it says in the article. They probed into the brain, into the emotion part of the brain. I'm not sure what it's called. I haven't got the article with me, but they probed into the brain and they shocked the emotion part of. I think he was a 31-year-old man, and they shocked his brain. A couple of days later, he was sitting up, happy, his family around him, eating, drinking, talking. So the technology has really come a long way, and this has just happened in 2007.
This was a man in a coma. You're talking.
Amazing, yeah. Within 2 days.
Well, there it is. So it's you know, those kind of advances. But you know, again, we're moving into an era too, within the next 4 years or so, where there's going to be some serious fights over resources now,
mm-hmm.
over oil, over water, over food, and unless we learn to share, and unless we once again, if we're not more spiritual, there won't be any people at all.
Yeah.
So
spirituality is you know, basically, you know, just serving and, you know, just, I guess, you know, it's being, serving others, and that's what spirituality means to me. It's just a service, isn't it, that you have to practice every day, and this is what these yoga people do. And the higher consciousness, we've got to get onto that stage, poverty and so forth, get rid of that. And
well, let's hear it for the yoga people.
Yes, hands together. So I've enjoyed our chat, Sean.
Well, thanks, Steve. It was a really fantastic surprise.
I stepped in. This is at the last minute, and funnily enough, I saw your name. That was the guest. So it's been a delight. So
Cosmic Coincidence Control Center. May I help you? All right, buddy. Well, give Amy all my love.
Have you got anything else to say? Your website.
I'm sorry. The
you'll be doing MLA and.
Sure. We're doing obviously the Conscious Life Expo at the LAX Hilton. That's going to be February 8th, 9th, and 10th. Directly after that, February 13th through March 1st, we are going to Peru on a fantastic trip to Peru, to Machu Picchu, to Lake Titicaca, and to Easter Island. And the Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow, is $65 for a 12-issue subscription. Operators are standing by if you want to call the number, 888-452-7999. That's 888-452-7999. Or to make it easier for you, Sean David Morton, S-E-A-N, David Morton, M-O-R-T-O-N.com, www.seandavidmorton.com. And we'll see you at the movies.
See you at the movies, sure.
All right, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
You same. Bye. And for the rest of the listeners out there, then just to remind you of the Conscious Life Expo, which is being held at the LAX Hilton, Feb 8 through 11, 2008. So that's another 4 weeks' time, Feb 8 through 11. Well, in fact, it's three to 4 weeks' time. It's going to be at the LAX Hilton. Yeah, just to remind you, the Conscious Life Expo, Feb 8 through 11, 2008, at the LAX Hilton. It's a wonderful event. I'm Stephen McCrory, and I'm stepping in for Dr. Pat this evening, and she's away, and we wish her well. And thanks to Sean for coming on to the show, and we look forward to seeing you at the Conscious Life Expo, www.consciouslifeexpo.com. Go to the website. Sign up. You're more than welcome to come in and enjoy yourself. Film festival, business symposium, a lot of things going on. As Sean said, it's one big circus, and it's a wonderful place to be. Again, www.consciouslifeexpo.com. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.